You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, dressed in black with a beautiful morning in Brooklyn, streaming in through his windows. I can see the back of you right now, Kalen.
Yeah.
It's very trippy. I got the front view. I got the back view of the mirror. Like, it's like I'm in a different dimension right now, man.
Yeah, I don't know how this Zoom thing works, but we're going to try a couple different things today. We'll see how it goes.
Just getting through it.
That Kalen's currently using off-field enhancements because he's got the extra light clearly on him, which we can see in the mirror.
Yeah,
so he's got that perfect lighting, which is unfair.
Yes, the ring light making him look beautiful while the rest of us suffer here in the mundane lighting of our apartments. Actually, Doyle's got a pretty good one. You got a glow to you. You know how the glow to them? Jack Harrison, man. Jack Harrison is glowing with that new haircut, with the clean lines, the clean touches, the first goal, and Leeds United's Premier League history in, I don't know, like a million years. I don't know, pre-Bielsa,
16,
whatever it is.
16 years.
It feels like a million. They're not even part of for the American
They're
soccer
a big
fan.
Club. They're massive. They're a big club.
For the American soccer fan.
Is that your Yorkshire accent?
That was my version of a Bobby Warshaw Australian accent doing a Brit. So I was six degrees.
That was perfect. Funny. It was perfect. I know you're a big Prim guy, Kalen. Did you check this game out? Did you see the golazo that was Jack Harrison's three touch over the top beauty against Liverpool?
Absolutely, yeah, man. Of course, I don't miss many Prem games in the mornings, but this was one that I was definitely tuned in for because it's the first match for Liverpool and it was at Anfield, and then I saw Jack getting the start and I was like, oh man, this is going to be awesome to watch, and then like. That ball came to him and he took that first touch and I was like, oh man, this guy clearly he has no respect for Trent here, just completely put him as they say through the blender. But I mean, it was actually really, he took it so well. It's that second touch too, and then cutting inside. I mean, it was something we've seen from him in the past as far as being able to really just be really direct, go right at a guy. And then kind of unbalanced people. So, and he took the finish well. He played, and not just that, he played well throughout the match. Like, he kept possession, he tucked inside, he was able to get up and down the wing, he served in some dangerous balls. Like, he was man of the match for me, for Leeds. So, it was fantastic to watch.
Doyle, when you hear these conversations and think about the way we talk about these things as American and Canadian soccer fans, is it weird to you, like, how much we celebrate these little moments that they become not formative, but just like, yeah, we told you. Did you say it? Did Jack Harrison develop an MLS, or is that me overreading?
No, I don't think it's weird. I mean, let me rephrase. In the global scheme of things, it might be a little bit weird. I know there are other selling leagues that kind of take a similar amount of pride when one of their guys ends up going and scoring against a Liverpool or, you know, going and starring for a Bayern Munich. So it is unusual, but it's also perfectly natural given where MLS has gone in the past 5 years, especially, and where it was before that, at least in terms of perception and in terms of just practice. Like, MLS teams were not thrilled about selling players up until very, very recently. And now we're having an increasing amount of data points across the best leagues and the best team in the world that our guys can go and score against the Liverpool at Anfield, or can go and, you know, hoist the Champions League trophy standing next to Lewandowski and Thomas Müller, and can, you know, score a goal that puts you into the Champions League semifinals. So I think it's a totally appropriate for MLS fans to celebrate these types of moments, because it does show that we are becoming the league that a lot of us have wanted to be. And like, let's face it, MLS is a good league, but it's not the Prem. And to have that sort of top-down validation that our good young players can go across the pond and play at the highest level and score goals like that, that's meaningful. And it's meaningful to those of us who are in it and watching MLS every week, every game, but it's also meaningful for that broad section of American soccer fans and Canadian soccer fans who are Premier League fans, but who maybe aren't MLS fans. And I do think that moments like Alphonso Davies had, of course, last month, and moments like Jack Harrison had this weekend, I think those matter in terms of building the fan base and building the perception of this league locally and globally.
I got a job for you, Dave. You want to be the connector now. Go to all the academies in England and get them to Connecticut, man. You were there this weekend. You're familiar with the ground. We got to get guys into boarding schools, all right?
I think it was Massachusetts.
Whatever. Somewhere in the Northeast.
I think he broke Charlie Davies' high school record.
Oh, wow.
Not Marcus Tracy's. That's the difference.
Big difference.
Between Connecticut and Massachusetts.
Big difference.
I'm jealous you guys got to watch this game. I'm a Champo guy, so I don't get to watch these anymore. So I'm jealous, but enjoy.
Give Jack a lot of credit, though, because I think a lot of people thought when he got signed by City that it was, just the way they were kind of picking off.
Mixed this screwed ass.
Right, my computer just glitched for a second. But I went over there to visit him, and we spent some time up in Middlesbrough, and he was up there and like not playing a bunch at first, and it was difficult, and then he's really, people would say, oh, well, Pep didn't know who he was when he signed, but I would imagine Pep knows who he is now. I think everybody does when you score a goal like that against Liverpool. And so I just think he's had to really work his way up and fight for playing time, and then alongside the success of finding the right club and getting some valuable experience there. So he's worked for everything he's gotten. He's taken the long, hard road, falling through the cracks and coming over here and working his way through Major League Soccer as well too. So a ton of respect for him. And I think he's got to be buzzing, like that confidence right now. And he's going to be an important player for that. So
we got what you're saying, what I'm hearing here is that we need to reach out to Jack Harrison, get him on this show. And ask him what it's like playing for the
All-Star. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
That's what I'm hearing.
He is one of the best people that have played in MLS. I know Kalen knows, but like, sit with him, talk to him. I think he came through right around the same time as Tyler Adams, and it was like, whoa, you guys are more polished on camera than in an interview than any of the 35-year-olds that are currently playing in MLS. And they're both like 18. It was wild, but I love him. So I'm excited to see him do his thing. Obviously, I can't watch, but I'm excited to hear.
Honestly, I remember the thing I remember about Jack Harrison from the start is his mom basically being sort of his shadow all the time, and her just like joy, just nothing but joy all the time to kind of see her son go through this. She had moved over here. I'm sure she had a wonderful weekend as it was, but a big goal for him and a big goal for Reggie Cannon, too. We're going to talk about him in a little bit. He scored in a friendly for Boavista, his first appearance. Rodrigo Carvalho is going to join us. He's an expert on the Portuguese league to tell us about Albert Elise, who reportedly, per Ivis Galarsep, is headed to Boavista as well. They're raiding Major League Soccer right now. And to give us a scouting report on Jonder Cadiz, who is the new DP there in Nashville. Nashville got a big result. We'll talk about that in a second, but we're going to stick with the other expansion side as we roll into the weekend, because the big news was Gonzalo Higuain. We don't have the press release yet. We don't have the official part. We do have a photo at the airport with Jorge Mas, who owns Inter Miami, saying, welcome to a champion. And unless it's somebody else under that mask, that's Gonzalo Higuain. And then we have reports out there out of Italy that Higuain signed a 2-year deal through 2022, so remainder of this season, then 2 more years, that would make him the highest paid player in Major League Soccer at around $7 million or so. He apparently got about $2 million to leave Juventus. But to me, this changes everything with Gonzalo Higuain. Maybe I was living in a different world where Blaz Matuidi is a TAM player, but somehow I wasn't connecting the dots that a guy who was worth $100 million 4 years ago wouldn't be the highest paid player in the league. Like, I kind of thought he would be in the $4 or $5 million range, but that sounds wrong. And I think it changes a lot of things for him. What are the expectations that we have for Gonzalo Higuain in this team?
Why does it change anything?
I don't know. Just maybe
it's a DP contract. It doesn't matter to you what he pays him.
That's true. It doesn't matter to me. But for some reason,
if he can be bought down, right? If you can't bring another DP in, it doesn't really matter what the contract is above that.
Maybe it's the prestige thing. Because you're right. I'm not out here when Jozy Altidore is hurt or when Jozy Altidore isn't playing well, which admittedly is not that often. The hurt part is the more common thing with Jozy. I'm not out here saying Jozy Altidore, comma, the most highly paid player in Major League Soccer, should do better and has to do better because these are the expectations. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the cap mechanisms are like, and Jorge Mas can spend his money and David Beckham and that ownership group can do whatever they want with it.
I think,
but I guess in my mind,
I think it changes things. I mean, because anytime you're the highest paid player in the league, there's going to be added pressure on you. And look, he's paid like the best player in Major League Soccer, so he's got to be somewhere near that top end range of people that are performing. And you wouldn't break the bank and spend that if it wasn't that. And then I would also say he's supposed to eventually draw people when you can come to games or sell, be marketable, be a face of that franchise. And with his global sort of like, you know, exposure and experience, I would imagine he's going to draw a bunch of interest, but it's got to translate onto the field, similar to the way we've seen Wayne Rooney come in and what he was able to do for that DC United side on the pitch and also doing interviews and that excitement around it. And I would say, Zlatan, anytime we've seen some of these big names come in, there's expectations because of the size of their name and because, in a lot of cases, the size of the contract. So I think it does change things.
I had him previously as can be an MVP candidate, probably should be an MVP candidate. But now I feel like for Miami, for the amount of money that they're spending, for the profile, for what he means as far as flexibility within the cap, like he has to be an MVP candidate. Maybe that's the difference. Like, you have to deliver when they pony up that amount of money, when they put those expectations on you, because that's what they're doing when they sign you to a contract like that. That's what they're doing when you're the third DP and they don't have another one to go out and spend. Like, you have to be that missing piece, especially given the context of where they're at.
So I'm not sure that changes much whether he's making $4 million or $7.5 million a year. I think they were going to expect that of him regardless. And frankly, they need that. You know, this Miami team, they have some real issues. A lot of it's in the final third. I do think more of it's in central midfield, but either way, I do think Higuain, whatever he's making, should help, provided he's fit enough. Because there were times last year, even though he was productive, I mean, he had 11 goals and 8 assists in about, I want to say, about 2,700 minutes last year across all competitions for Juve, which is good. Like, that's really good ROI. It's not $12 million a year, which is what Juve was paying them. And clearly, given their debts, they're happy to have them off the books. But that type of production is, should translate. But even with that, there were times last year where it's like, oh man, he's just not able to do the work anymore. And that is going to be the differentiating aspect of this for me, because we have seen guys come in like Lampard and Gerrard who they stepped on the field in MLS and they're like, at this point, all they can do is either hit, you know, long balls or get the occasional tap in. And there's a difference between that and like David Villa. David Villa was up for it every single week. He was, you know, a maniac for that NYCFC team.
Robbie Keane,
another great example of that. And so that's what you have to hope for if you're Miami. And I think you would be hoping for that no matter what number he was on, because right now this Miami team needs that.
I think he has to be that. To me, he has to be Robbie Keane on steroids. Like, at that number, at his age, he is only 32. If you look at the league, there are plenty of difference makers that are doing that at much older. I don't want to, like, you know, like Chris Wondolowski is a completely different example. The man's 37. Like, if Gonzalo Higuain is class, he should get goals.
Yeah.
He should create goals.
And if
he
you're
should
looking
make it
about
easier for his teammates.
The way that he's going to change that team potentially and turn things around, I think every single match they've played in has been a one goal difference. Nothing. They have not been losing games by 2, 3, 4 goals. Now, part of that is you look at the schedule and they've played Nashville a bunch and it's been sort of tighter affairs, but still they seem solid at the back. Of course, you've got Luis Robles in goal. So I think pretty solid back line. It's just they haven't really been able to take their chances. They've created enough to get goals. I would expect that to get better, but I think a striker like this, if you come in and you're not asking him in the same way that Zlatan came in and had to score two or three sometimes to see them get on the right side of results, one might do it. You know, one goal might be able to change the real, you know, where they are on the table. If he's able to kind of consistently get a couple chances a game, finish one, and occasionally more, I think he can actually really help turn this team around.
I think you mentioned at the beginning, but I think the comp to Rooney is nice here in that Rooney was a pure goal scorer and came here and was able to do things a little deeper on the field just because of his level of soccer experience and IQ. And then also his ability to activate Lucho Acosta, someone he could trust, someone he could play off of, someone who could take pressure away. If he can do any of that for Pizarro and for Carranza, then it becomes another step where, as you said, it doesn't have to be Zlatan where he has to score 28 goals. He can do other things for this team. And it's not what Gonzalo Higuain's always been known for in his career, but I think we've seen enough players come to this league and change the things they do a little bit because of their soccer experience and what they're capable of. And technically the level that, you know, you just have to be at it if you're Gonzalo Higuain, that it can change a lot of things for Miami. Cause I agree with you. I think there are pieces there. It's not maybe what we thought this was going to be. It's not James Rodriguez, who's 28 years old and the best player on Everton already and blah, blah, blah. It's not that. But that doesn't mean that they can't be good and he's definitely going to make them better.
I do think that what he had to do last year, which was kind of humble himself a little bit, so to speak. You know, he came over from Napoli and he was top of the world. The next 2 years, he was Juve's man. But then last year, it felt like he had to fit in. He had to be more of a creator at times. Like, I think he needs to be, to go back to Villa, to go back to Robbie Keane, almost like a brain on the field for them. And to just like you said, to level up, like if he could get more out of Pellegrini, for instance, like we keep talking about those investments that these teams make and how to get the most out of them. Like, okay, well, there's like a Vela, perhaps Rossi relationship that you have right there. Maybe that's Carranza. Maybe that's justifying the amount spent on Pizarro. Like whatever it is, I think Gonzalo Higuain equals more goals. And to your point, Kalen, maybe that's all they need. One and a half a game. Just a different gravity up there because right now they're not getting it.
If he's giving them a goal or a goal and a half a game, he'll be worth it, whatever the price.
Hey, that's fair. That's fair. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Montreal because I had to pick one game that was the most wild, the most fun. LAFC Portland was almost there. And of course, they're chewing up an entire tree outside of my apartment right now. So I apologize for that. What'd you think of this one, Dave? You're our resident Canada expert now.
I thought it was kind of what we expected. It was chaos for large parts of this game. I think there could have been two games. If Cavallini doesn't get sent off, I think Vancouver's in this game and has a chance to compete with them. Once he gets sent off, it's over. And then you get a wild own goal, a fight. So it was pretty much all over the place. And Montreal did what they had to do. They got
the
two-goal
win. Voice out of the Cavallini sent off? Because, I mean, he kicked Clément Diop in the head. So,
but he didn't even get sent off for that.
Yeah, I guess it was the beef with Binks.
Yeah, because they both got yellows, and it was just a second yellow for Cavallini. So he didn't even get in trouble for kicking someone in the head.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, chaos. I love it. Canadian championship. Let's go.
And Montreal are still alive.
Montreal, what they needed to do. I mean, Montreal are driver's favorites.
Seat. Yeah.
Because, like, if they any win in the next game on Wednesday against Vancouver puts them into the final against the CSL Island Games winner, and they would be strong favorites in that one as well. So it was a big performance from Montreal, and it had that, you know, CONCACAF chippiness to it, and they kind of thrived with that. The other thing that's happened is, like, over the past month, Thierry Henry has sort of settled into a formation and a playing style, and it's this really weird and lopsided. It's kind of a 4-2-3-1, but also kind of a 4-4-2 in which Romel Kyoto plays as a center forward and either Lasse Lapalainen or Giaquanco plays as a left winger. And then Sam Piet is either kind of a right winger
or kind of
like a right shuttler. And then they have Taider as like a number 10 and Wanyama is the back point. but it's also like he sometimes has Maciel there as a fellow distributor, but sometimes Maciel pushes up more. It's this really lopsided.
Or Maciel just 2 foots people and then goes.
Which was just like, that was absolutely gruesome tackle. And he should see at least 3 games for that one. But like it's working for Thierry Henry. It's not perfect, right? They're not going out there and burying teams week after week, but they seem to have a much clearer identity and much clearer idea of how they want to get into the final third than they had earlier.
I also like that he trusts Binks, how much he does, because Binks has been awesome. To slide him in even one more and be like, that's the guy that it's all built around defensively, I think is impressive. Also, the Tuck, Ray Gattis, great season. Let Tuck, Samuel Piet, goal, huge moment. El Tuck, Xavier Arriaga, tough year. So we've got 2 of the 3 Tucks having a good year. We're just waiting on Arriaga to step up.
Ray stole the Tuck from me, by the way. That was something.
You were a Tuck?
What? Dude, go back.
Yeah, Kalen was a big Tuck.
Big Tuck. Yeah. Big Tuck. That was my
because Kalen was always getting pulled back by defenders.
Yeah.
So he had to show the referee the shirt.
Gotcha.
Ref, look, it's out.
I've got a photo of me playing against Ray his rookie year. He's not going with the Tuck. And I got the Tuck. He's yanking my jersey. I think that was the moment it clicked for him.
Can I ask you this, player's perspective?
Yeah.
Sam Piet scores. They pan to the Montreal sideline. It's his first goal in MLS. They pan to the Montreal sideline. And Thierry Henry, the assistants, the whole bench are basically like, laughing and clapping and cracking up. It was like such a pure, wonderful MLS moment to me of just like, hell yeah, Sam Piet got it done.
Dude, I mean, yeah.
That's the talk, baby.
One of your sixes getting forward like that. I remember Logan.
It was his first career MLS goal.
Yeah. Goal for Chicago when I was there. And I think the ball may have gone off his back. He's going to kill me if I get this wrong. But everybody went nuts. Everybody knows when who doesn't have one and like yeah. I mean, he took it pretty well too. He took it to the back post and good run. I think it was just the beginning for him. The Tuck,
I like
the Tuck community. We all stood up in applause.
Oh man! Now did you tuck in on the show here? What are you doing there?
I mean, I once saw Chris Armas tuck a big puff jacket into his sweatpants, into the tight sweatpants. That's the veteran Tuck. That's like next level Tuck talent.
That's national team Tuck.
You got to be you got to be at least, you know, 4 best 11s. But you can't just try that if you're an amateur.
That's what I was going to say. You got to have the multi best 11 resume on that one. All right, look, I'm happy because the Canadian Championship is really delivering, at least in this initial phase. We'll see what happens Wednesday, Montreal and Vancouver. It's at Vancouver, I believe, and Montreal just has to win, as we said, to get that berth in the Canadian Championship. Who are they going to play, Dave? What's the...
Sadly, Pacific FC were eliminated in the final four of the CPL right now, so it's between Halifax Wanderers, Cavalry, or Hamilton.
What happened to Pacific? What happened?
So listen, Pablo Nacá, best coach in the world, should be up for MLS jobs. We're going to talk about that later. They go out, they play the game. They open up, they play attacking. It's a playoff format. It's a little tough. They gave up some early goals in their first 2 games.
Okay.
So they actually still have a 3rd game, but they can't get them.
Okay, but he stuck to
it. It happens, man.
He stuck to his football.
Yeah, that's what happened.
I respect it, Pa. All right.
Love it, Pa. All right, look, speaking of Canada, we have a schedule, but we only have 3 more games. It's through September 27th. We also have some playoff information for you. This is interesting, and Doyle dropped out. He's pulling a Charlie Davies, I'm assuming, maybe a little bathroom break. I don't know what's going on with him. Toronto's going to go to Rentschler, the famous Rentschler, where Landon Donovan said his goodbyes to the U.S. national team, where NYCFC had a long ago journey, never to be remembered again.
Landon Donovan said his goodbyes while 40% of the stadium was sitting on the highway in traffic.
Wait, yeah. Where is
if you're going to Rentschler, well, I guess you can't go to games, so never mind.
Where is it? I'm lost. Where is this?
It's in Connecticut. It's in UConn's Hotford football stadium.
Ah, I went and saw one of the Sarakin-led U.S. men's national team games there.
Yeah.
Not very memorable match, but
I'm pretty sure Brett Shea scored a game-winning... Rex Shea scored a game-winning Gold Cup goal against Costa Rica at Rentschler Field.
Yeah, it's a legendary place. That. Was that the game where you, Dave, were you running? Or was that like...
That was the Donovan game.
Yeah, you were running through swamps to get to the game in time.
Ruined my shoes. Worth it. You're welcome, Landon. You
Montreal's going to be at Red Bull Arena. Vancouver's at Providence Park. This is all because of, obviously, the issues with COVID and travel. I was going to ask Doyle what the supporter shield means to him this year, but we're not going to do that. We have three more games. We also have the playoff qualification stuff, though, as well. 18 teams, we knew that. 10 from the East, 8 from the West. We didn't know how it was going to break down once they qualified, though, as well. But here's how it's going to work. In the Western Conference, all 8 teams that go to the playoffs will qualify directly to what they're calling round 1. So that's basically into a 16-team bracket that comes down on each side into MLS Cup. In the Eastern Conference, you have 10 teams. It doesn't work that way. So the top 6 teams are going to qualify directly. Then you basically have a play-in game, NCAA tournament style, between the 7 through 10 seeds. So the first seed, second team in the East get a little bit of advantage, a team that you can construe it as that, a team that's already played a game on short rest, a team that in theory would be worse than them, but we know how the schedule is working this year. It's all crazy, cattywampus, unbalanced, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it goes into 8 teams on both sides. They play it single elimination all the way down.
Just as Doyle comes back in, to stick to the UConn thing, I expect from Anders and Chris that at the end of this whole thing, we get a one shining moment sizzle reel of MLS playoffs. Because if you got playing games and a Sweet 16, then I have to have one shining moment. So I'm just putting that into the universe.
Same music? Or are we going with the MLS anthem?
No, it's got to be one shining moment.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Wait, Hans Zimmer.
Yeah,
remake of one shining moment.
Exactly.
One shining moment.
I'm here for that. That's the matchup I live for. Doyle, what do you think about the supporter shield this year?
I haven't fully formed my thoughts on it, but I'm leaning towards it doesn't actually mean anything this year.
Doyle, be careful.
If you play,
is MLS more important? Are you going to do that?
If you play Cincinnati 62 times and you win the supporter shield because of it, that's not great.
All right. Well, what about all those years where I played New England 62 times with Chicago? I mean, the schedule's been wacky forever.
Not this wacky, Caleb. It's not been like this.
I like that Kalen got cut off.
This is the most unbalanced the schedule has ever been.
Okay. I like that Kalen got cut off just saying the year of our Lord, so I assume Wyatt Wiebe is Kalen's Messiah, and that's what he's following.
It's fair. It's fair. He has the face of a cherub. He might be the chosen one. We don't know. That's something that you figure out later in life. Nobody knows.
It just hurts me to hear Doyle talk about the supporter shield like this. It hurts.
Yeah. Look, the wise men would have come, but it's COVID times. Yeah, I don't think supporter shield matters, man. It's a weird year for it. Like, I almost feel like the supporters should just keep it for a year and just be like, hey, guys, you understand. We're going to hold on to it. We shall see. But what do we think about the league itself and how all this is working? Because in the meeting before, we jumped in on how we're watching MLS. And you had an interesting way of thinking about it, Dave. And I think everybody who really follows this league is probably doing the same thing. So how are you watching this league, and what is it telling you about this strange, strange season?
So on like a Saturday night when there are 5 to 7 overlapping games throughout, and Kalen just leaves me on that, which I appreciate, I look at the lineups and say who's playing an MLS roster and who's playing a USL roster. And the most MLS rosters I can find, those are the games I tune into. And sometimes if I see other names like John Gallagher or whoever else out there, those games kind of get written off.
Why is John Gallagher?
That's the line. You always have to have the line. That's the line.
All right. I mean,
sorry, do you respect his time at Aberdeen and the Scottish League?
Time out. John Gallagher drew a PK this weekend.
John Gallagher has actually been decent.
Yeah.
So respect on him. And also that is like the opposite I would have expected from you. I would have thought that you would be like, whichever team's playing the USL roster, that's the one I'm gonna watch.
I watch enough USL. I don't need to also watch it when I'm watching MLS.
No, it is, but like that is part of the bizarreness of 2020, which includes the Shield and includes the 23 game schedule. Hopefully we get to that. And you know, everything that's happened since March. And I totally get that. A part of me also likes that. Like, I like that we're seeing managers go down their rosters and give players meaningful minutes in positions and in situations where they wouldn't have gotten them before. I do have a gripe with the way MLS managers are kind of rotating their squads. Like, squad rotation doesn't mean, well, we have game Sunday, Wednesday, and Saturday, so we're just going to use all the reserves on the Wednesday game. It's like, why not use, like, start, like, mix and match. Do, like, three or four different, you know, reserves. And, like, we're at a point in MLS where your squad depth should be good enough so that you have at least four positions on the field where there is, like, a legitimate battle for the starting mm-hmm. spot. So rotate those guys out. Figure out how to play your best players 55 minutes, maybe 60 if you need to, and, like, give those guys a break. Like, that's what squad rotation shouldn't be. It shouldn't be seven new starters for the midweek game. And to Seattle's credit, like, nobody's done this better over the past month than Brian Schmetzer and the Sounders. And part of that is because they just run out the same 4-2-3-1 every single game. And 95% of the time, that is the right call. So then you have Jordy Delen. You have Handwala Buana. You have, I mean, Xavier Arriaga, who has been mostly terrible this year. He came in against San Jose last week, and he ripped them up with his passing. And now guys like Ladero, Rui Diaz, and Jordan Morris are irreplaceable, but also he's managed their minutes by saying, okay, Jordan Morris, you're going to play 60 minutes in this one because we have a lead. So, like, it has shown, it has made it more interesting to watch in a lot of ways, but part of the way is to look at MLS managers and be like, have you never actually thought about squad rotation? Have you not figured out the best way to do this? I haven't written about that yet, but I guess there's a column coming now.
Yeah, now something's coming. That reminds me, we're not going to talk about it in depth, but any lingering feelings from this Pacifica RV campout trip for the San Jose Earthquakes? Boy, those got blown up real fast midweek against Seattle. We were not around to talk about this, but speaking of rotation, I mean,
well, Xavier Arriaga looked good in a game in which I think all of us would have looked okay playing defensively for Seattle. It was like 18-0 30 minutes into this game. That was intense.
It's a bizarre game. That team outing, that backfired on him. As we wait for Kalen to come back, he's pulled a Bobby Warshaw here. It's not funny and hilarious to me that we have so many different examples of people jetting in the middle of shows. Let's talk about Miles Robinson. An unwise comment from Miles Robinson, probably a throwaway comment, probably didn't mean anything. Ahead of this Nashville SC game, the young Atlanta United center back says, quote, I think the group as a whole knows we have better players than them being Nashville, and I think we just have to go out there and prove it. We're probably blowing this up.
You definitely
fans are.
Fans
are probably blowing this up. It's probably not that big a deal. It definitely would not have been a big deal had Atlanta performed in an admirable way or won. They didn't. They lost 4-2 to Nashville. And then you have Dax McCarty afterwards doing Dax McCarty things, saying, hey, some old man advice. You know, just hold off when you're in a struggle. Just, I know you're trying to gas your boys up, but hold off. This was not one shining moment for Atlanta United. This was basically to me, sort of the accumulation of what this season is for them, which has increasingly turned into a throwaway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the manager called it one of the worst performances the club has seen. Now, the history is not that long, but facts, yes. And I've been wondering and I've been thinking about, because Charlie Davies put this in my head, what might be different this year, if anything? I guess they canned the coach and they sold their most expensive players if fans were in the stands. Like, it's one thing to have to watch this on TV and experience it on social media. It's another to be in the stadium for some of the moments that have happened this year for Atlanta United after the juxtaposition of what being in the stadium used to mean. This is just a low moment. This is tough, especially against a Nashville team that, like, four goals has to be their most in their very short history.
Oh, yeah.
They haven't looked like this. This isn't who Nashville was.
I think this is the first time they've scored multiple goals. I can't speak to the playing in the stadium with the fans or not, though I think that's a good question for Thursday when you have Charlie on. But, like, Miles Robinson is wrong. You said it. He was clearly trying to gas up his teammates. But are you going to take Dax McCarty and Anibal Godoy? Or are you going to take Jeff Larenowitz and Mateus Rosetta? I'm taking Dax and Godoy. Are you going to take Miles Robinson and Anton Walks, or are you going to take Walker Zimmerman and Dave Romney? I'm taking Walker Zimmerman and Dave Romney. I think there's the fullbacks. I think it's maybe a push Lovitz is better than George Bello right now, even though George Bello had a nice game. And Escobar is better than Alistair Johnson. Center forward, I would take Dom Baji over Kubo Torres and Adam John. On the wings, I mean, I would definitely take Randall Leal over any of the wingers on Atlanta, and I would take Mukhtar over Ezekiel Barco as playmaker. So I think the bottom line for this is that Miles Robinson is wrong, and the team that this is not to pick on the kid. I think Miles Robinson is a fantastic young talent, and I think that they have other good young talents on this team, but Atlanta's just not very good. And last year with Nagby and with LGP and with Joseph and even with PT, they had moments where they just had so much on that field, and Julian Gressel, obviously, they just had so much talent on that field. They could brute force some wins. They could just go out there and just be so much like their baseline was so much higher because of that. This year, they are not even remotely close to that level. And that's how you have a team that's winless in five and has one win in nine since July, since the start of the MLS's back tournament down in Orlando.
Welcome back, Kalen.
What's up?
Yeah, I mean,
sorry about that.
It's all good.
I was glad to make it for Doyle's little go right there. That was great. That was awesome. My take on the Miles Robinson thing, I think he's trying to give his team some confidence, right? Like, they haven't been playing well. They haven't been. He's basically affirming his belief in his side. And if you look at transfer market, whatever that those things are, the FIFA ratings, he's right. I mean, they have the South American Player of the Year. They have a bunch of. Or sorry, they had the South American Player of the Year. They've had like, you know, they have Barco, they have player, they have himself, they have a lot of young talent, they have a U.S. international goalkeeper, and so I would say I understand where he's coming from, and in some ways, although I think Doyle makes a compelling argument, I do think that Atlanta has maybe more top end talent or things talent that is perceived that way, but it's not performing necessarily that way, and especially in this moment. And I think Dax did a good job there of kind of being like, hey, young fella. I would imagine him putting in the veteran tuck as he was saying this as well. but to just say kind of, hey, look, like, and for a team like Nashville, it gives them something to rally around too, and it clearly gave Dax a little bit extra energy as well in this match. So yeah, I think it was kind of fair play on both sides. I don't take a big issue with what Miles had to say, but I think it's totally fine for Dax to kind of give a little bit of lesson, especially for a team like Nashville. That's also going to pump up his team, right? That's going to also take things forward for them and be like, hey, we maybe haven't gotten the respect that we deserve, and they went out and proved it.
I think you guys rightfully make fun of me sometimes as a narrative guy, but this is what I think the league needs more of. Guys speaking their mind on both sides before and after the games. They're being a little bit extra in games because of something off the field. This had it. Now, Nashville fans are going to tweet us for over and over and over, Dave, and say, I know Doyle went off and said that we look pretty good, but he didn't talk about us. We're going to get a number 9 in Yonder Cadiz, and we'll talk to Rodrigo Carvalho about that in a second. Our defensively, we're solid. Like, we have a foundation. Give Nashville some love before we move on and find out who this number 9 is.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last show. You asked, I think on Thursday, between Miami and Nashville, who I thought would make the playoffs. And I picked Nashville, and we're about to do the interview with Rodrigo. But from hearing what he feels about Cadiz coming in, I'm even more excited for them. And as I said, they've built a base. They know who they are, and they went out and got a player who fits exactly into that. Will he land perfectly season one? No one knows. There's no way to know that in MLS. We don't know if Higuain will. But I think they had the concept of, these are the things we think we can control coming in as an expansion team. We think we can build a solid defensive base. We can put experience in midfield. We're going to go out and get a legitimate Central American attacking player who we know we can get now. And then as our season builds, we can look to see what's available on the market. And in a year like this, where Benfica signs 75 first team players, you can find one that's available on loan, that's a DP level player, and bring him in for the exact position of need. And you hope that Baji gets a few goals, looks more confident in this game. If he can give you enough minutes to at least let Cadiz get comfortable, maybe they play together. If not, you still have more talent up top going forward.
All right, we heard that connection between Portugal. We talked about it with Reggie Cannon, Albert Elias is now floating around, and of course, Yonder Cadiz coming this way from Portugal to the U.S. Let's get some insight on that. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. We're talking to Rodrigo Carvalho. Rodrigo, welcome to Extra Time. You're a coach. You are someone with a lot of experience, kind of on both sides of the pond, particularly with the Portuguese league, and we want to pick your brain, man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure. I've been a fan. I've been a constant listener. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh man, David's blushing. Yeah. David's blushing. All right, look, we've talked a lot about Yonder Cadiz in Nashville. We've talked a lot about Reggie Cannon in Boa Vista. Now we're talking Albert Elias. But if we're being honest, we don't know that much. You do. Let's start with Yonder Cadiz. What are Nashville getting? Why was he available? What are your first impressions of that move?
Well, Cadiz is he played a lot of years in Portugal with a interesting aspect that he always played for teams that were almost being relegated or relegated. So for those type of teams that play most of the time in a lower block, waiting for a counterattack, he's been perfect. And I know Nashville isn't exactly like that, but the situation is not that different at the moment. He comes and it's an odd situation where a 6'3" player, his main characteristic is being fast, is being technical. And that's the type of player he is. He had a good season, a good mid-season at Ligue 1. He was playing against a really good competition. It was at Dijon. And if you look at his numbers, he will never be a striker that scores 20 goals, 25 goals. But in those type of teams, he'll get you those 10 goals. He'll get you important plays. He makes individual plays out of nowhere because he's fast. He knows how to hold the ball. His relationship with the players on the field, ability to connect, is not always the best. But as a target man, as a player who can create out of nowhere and give them that constant threat in behind and going at defenders, I think he's a great fit for them.
Why is it that he was available from Benfica? Why was he a guy that they were saying, okay, we'll move on?
First of all, his transfer to Benfica as a lot of almost a dirty side that no one understands in Portugal. I mean, he was good. He had a great season at Setúbal. But when he transferred, people knew he wasn't going to be a straight-up option and a starter. Last year in preseason, he did well, and there were talks that he could be the third striker, which was very good for him, and people were actually almost content with that option. He ended up not staying in the team because Benfica brought a 20 million Raul de Tomás from La Liga, and that's when he kind of was put aside. People knew he was available. He's a great striker, as I said, very useful for teams that are in the lower positions in the table, like Dijon was at the time. And they went for him. And if you see how he did there, again, his technical ability, the opportunities that he gets in the right place where he gets for teams that don't have that many chances, I think that's the main value. And right now, that's why he was available, because at Benfica, he was just not going to have those opportunities.
Give people an idea for when you're saying, you know, a guy who's playing maybe bottom half of Portugal and then mid-table in France, competitive level of what he has gone against physically, tactically, athletically, technically, coming into MLS. Where is the comparison lines?
Well, I think athletically, he'll just be top of the league, as you say. As I said, he's 6'3". He's used to playing against intense defenders, very aggressive, with not as much space as you might find in MLS, with a lot of teams trying to press high, with a lot of teams enjoying even man-marking, as we see San Jose. And in those type of games where he's going to have a little bit more space than he's used to, I think he can be lethal, running in behind, just grabbing the ball in midfield and accelerating, going through the dribble, being a valid option for his teammates on the counter. And in the box, I mean, again, he's 6'3". Even when you're playing in a bit more organized, as Nashville likes to do at times, he's a very valid option. He creates space for his teammates. And I think he's a great fit by that aspect of physicality to the MLS, to the league, to the spirit of defenders here that will enjoy those 1v1 battles. And he can have success in those.
That's got to be music to the ears of Nashville fans as they start to find out who this new DP is for them. Meanwhile, a guy going the other way, it seems, Ilis Glarsep reporting that Albert Elise is headed to Boa Vista. So now, of course, we have to watch Boa Vista games in mass because we got Reggie and
I
Albert.
I like the checkered jersey, though. It's beautiful. I will wear that. It's a checkered. It's beautiful. I like it.
Yeah, it's a great-looking jersey. What do you make of this move? We've been waiting, and Albert has been waiting, I think, for a long time to sort of make this jump. And I think people might have imagined that it would be into a Big Five league, so to speak. But this might be what he needs to sort of jumpstart his career and get a little traction.
Absolutely. I think Albert, honestly, it's still surprising he's only 24. When you talk about him, the years he's had in the MLS, the impact that has been growing year after year, he's still very young. This step seems like the right step for him to just have a chance in Europe. He deserves that. His nickname is actually the nickname for the Boa Vista fans, Pantera. So I think it's a starting by that, it's already a good match. And I'm interested to see is no doubt the impact he's had in the MLS. There's this little aspect about the new coach of Boa Vista enjoys playing with his wingers inside and the fullbacks doing the entire wing. I'm curious to see how Albert will adapt to that, having a little less space, maybe being more important creating for other guys. But I wouldn't be surprised if he sees some minutes also up top, which I could see that. It's the position that Boa Vista right now is missing the most. And if that's the idea of having someone that can move and support his teammates, kind of be a little free up top, I think he could be an option. And he actually has a profile that is similar to the current striker they have.
Can you just go deeper into Boa Vista? Because we've been talking about this. We don't know the coach. We don't know really the expectations. We don't know specifically the relationship they now have with Lille. It seems like it's kind of a feeder going here. What is Boa Vista historically? What are they now? Who is the coach? What do you expect from them this upcoming season?
Boa Vista is a real historic club in Portugal, the second club in the city of Porto. So it's very close to Porto. They are one of the five teams that has won the league in Portugal. So that's already a sign that you need to be a big club. It was 20 years ago in 2000 that they became champions for the first time with a great squad. And the identity of the team in the past years has been it's similar to what we see as Atletico Madrid, but in the bottom half of the table mostly. The identity of being aggressive, of having the city or that part of the city united against everything, and just being very compact and having coaches that prioritize defense. And now we're seeing a little shift. The coach, Vasco Seabra, he's been in the first league. He's a young coach. If I'm not wrong, he was in the first league first when he was 28 because he came from Passos de Ferreira. He was a coach of the under-19 team. The coach at the time was fired, and he got up and he did well. Then he didn't have any more opportunities, but he enjoys to have an offensive style. Last year with Mafra in the second league, they were the surprise. They had a minimum budget. They had one of the lower budgets. They stayed really close to the promoting positions and just playing an attractive style, just enjoying building out with three, with a defensive mid-dropping, the fullbacks going high, doing the entire wing. A lot of people in between lines, just combining quick, playing inside, outside, getting players in behind them. It was just great to see. And there's a lot of expectation about Seabra as a coach now in the first division, especially with this squad that is just getting players like Reggie, players like Albert, Adel Rami, Javi Garcia, players with a lot of experience, talent, Angel Gomez from Manchester United. There's just a lot of expectation.
How do you see Reggie fit into this whole thing?
Perfectly. Honestly, it's the position that I feel like it's the weakest in the league. I see him having direct impact as we see. He played his first friendly this weekend. I don't think he knew his teammates' names yet, but he was just playing. He was having fun. You could see him enjoying it. And the fact that he was going to attack a lot, his decision-making into the final third, it's a difference to the other guys in the league. The ability to make passes before he crosses, just finding guys inside, going 1v1, is fast, is technical. I do think he needs to improve a little bit on that first touch when teams are pressing a little higher. But I think with the coach's ideas, with the team's situation right now, with the league situation, is definitely a top three in the league. And I don't think he'll stay a long time in Portugal, unfortunately, for Boa Vista and Portuguese fans.
So you say that, though. What is the next step? Guys who have success at the level that Boa Vista's at over the last few years in Portugal, where do they go next? Where do these players feed into normally?
I think it's not even fair to compare with, of course, we have to wait, but compare with Boa Vista has been doing, because they're just going to be, they're going two steps ahead of what they've been doing from the budget, from the type of transfers they're doing, for the ambition that Adel Rami gets to the club and says, we want to go to the Champions League in like 1 year or 2 years. But this is everything before the season has started. We have to wait and see. They played really well this friendly. That was the first one that was on TV. But we can put Boa Vista in the top six, top seven for sure. And that's where teams and players get a look from other countries in Europe. I believe the relationship with Lille, as their owner, has now a good percentage of Boa Vista's shares. And I believe Luis Campos has been working with the scouting and transfers for Boa Vista. I believe Reggie can go to a club like Lille in the near future, one season, two maximum, I'll say, if everything goes well, and going to a big five, to a top five league, to a big club that is growing like Lille or any other club. I think it's the right step for him, and he just has to prove and adapt to Europe in this, I believe, short term at Boa Vista.
All right, Rodrigo Carvalho, tell people how they can follow you on Twitter. I've been coming to you, man, with my questions on the scouting report, and I got to a point where it's just like, we just need to have Ricardo on the show. That's how we have to do this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you can follow me on Twitter. I mean, RodrigoCCC97. I'm kind of a Twitter person. I follow a lot of you guys, just learning from that and just kind of helping when I can about these insights of Portuguese league and MLS. I do a little bit of both to the guys in Portugal. I help with MLS with you guys. I help with Portugal. It's a good relationship. And yeah, just, it was a pleasure. And thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, perfect. The bridge between two countries that are getting closer, it seems, in the transfer market right now. Thank you so much, Rodrigo.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Big thanks to Rodrigo for giving us some insight that we have been lacking. It sounds exciting for Reggie Cannon, potentially exciting for Albert Elise, depending on where he plays, how he fits in. And Yonder Cadiz, I mean, if Rodrigo's right, that is what Nashville need in large part. So TBD. But Dallas, though, they've already reloaded. Who, raise your hand if you like watching Andres Recuarte play. I mean, this guy's
legit. I thought this was going to be a Brian Reynolds segment.
No, we could. Let's save that one. We got plenty of time, man. We got plenty of time. For now, it's Recuarte with like the crazy outside the box volley and just controlling the game all night.
He was awesome, and he was in a lot of ways what Dallas have needed this year, especially when Paul McCall's played. Dallas is like fine, but he's gone till 2021, and they haven't been able to get into those really high leverage positions on either side, in the pockets on either side of the opposing defensive midfield, and pull them apart and do something with it. And Recuarte, I mean, the goal was a stunner, but even beyond that goal, he was excellent at getting Dallas's attackers into spots where they could do damage. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't as great a debut as what, you know, Alejandro Pozuelo had last year, but it certainly showed a lot of the things that had been missing from Dallas. And it looks like, I mean, after 90 minutes, it looks like a very savvy buy.
Pour some pills in out for Cobra.
Yeah.
Sad to see him go, man. But it sounded like he needed to go. Like, had some family stuff going on, wanted to be back in the Czech Republic. But that was a fun year and a half, gotta say.
I mean, the end of last year where he suddenly started winning playing time and scoring, you know, a goal every 55 minutes or whatever it was. And he just seemed like such a big personality off the field. Yeah, Cobra is one I'll miss, but it, you know, family is family and business is business. And it sounds like it worked out for everyone in this.
Give us your best Cobra moment, Dave, because I remember distinctly you doing some sweaty interviews with that.
Yeah.
Man.
He walked up to me after the game. I think I was down there for Hall of Fame weekend to interview him. And he was just wearing the tracking data thing, sports bra, whatever you want to call it. And he was like, sorry, I'm shirtless. And I was like, that's fine. And he was like, you can also go shirtless if you want. And I was like, I think we look different. without our shirts on. So I think we want more people to watch, not less. But I appreciate your well-developed body and all of your tattoos, because you are cool. Favorite Kobo moment, real quick, by the way, was, and Kaylin can speak to this better, but I know in every MLS team, every group of people, there's cliques. A lot of MLS teams, it comes based on background, right? You have Central American group, South American group, West African group, whatever it is. There aren't a lot of Czech Republic players on Dallas or in their system. I don't know if anyone's heard. And Cobra, I went to a couple of their trainings and he would just bounce from every group. And every time he'd leave one, they'd be laughing. And he just enjoyed, it seemed, being around all the players so much. And I was like, I think me and Cobra would be best friends.
So, sounds like you guys were.
R.I.P.
Sounds like you were. You got a real
I don't even think he knows any of these things happened, if you asked him. About his favorite David Goss moments of his MLS career, I don't even think he'd know.
He would definitely remember you if you took the shirt off, man.
That was a huge opportunity missed. Also, an ETR connection.
I couldn't get it out, Kaylin, because I was tucked so thoroughly.
Right. The tuck was very secure, and it was very difficult in that moment. Producer Anders also was, in Orlando for the bubble, was below Cobra for his famous DJ performance.
Oh, wow.
So we have a lot of threads here connected.
Did he have to pay extra for that, like, kind of VIP cabana?
Anders does. Anders is a big EDM guy. Anders is out at the clubs, pre-COVID. So,
It's a bottle service to get
a lot of the
spot.
Columbia, Missouri. Techno clubs is where
spent to do that. And that's what I mean bottle service Anders, that's what they call them in Missouri.
It's actually Little Czech Republic is another name for Columbia, Missouri. I don't know if anybody knew that, but don't do the research if you didn't. Let's talk about the Rapids, though. We love Recuarte, but I love, finally, the Colorado Rapids showing up for a Rocky Mountain Cup. As recently as like 3 months ago, I ranked this as the worst rivalry in Major League Soccer.
It was. That
because
was
it wasn't a rivalry. Because RSL just pummeled Colorado at literally every opportunity. They'd won the last five. Colorado hadn't won in eight. Colorado hadn't won in Utah since 2007, 13 years ago. I was in college at that time. I was like when I first got into Major League Soccer. And because I was so curious, and we'll talk about this game in a second or not, it's up to us. I want you guys to try to guess what was going on in 2007 for this April 30th game at Rice-Eccles Stadium.
I've got this. Where's Sasha and Benny in the comments for trivia? I was playing in Chicago this year, so I'll know this teams.
Okay. Who was Kyle Beckerman playing for at this time?
2000.
You tipped it. By asking it, you're
Oh, God. Okay.
Shout out the American number 10, Matty Bellucci.
But there were on the Colorado Rapids squad, let's see, let's do some counting here. There were at least, 1, 2, 3, 4 MLS head coaches. Who were those players?
Oh.
Head coaches.
Pablo Mastroianni.
Pablo Mastroianni is one. He played 90 in this game.
Pecky.
Pecky is one. He also played 90 in this game.
The other two are current head coaches?
No. They had to have head coached at some point.
Got it.
In the game, there's even more because you look at the RSL side and you've got Jason Kreis on the RSL side.
Was this Robbins last year?
It was Robin not. Fraser? No. Ugo Ahimelu was in the back line as well.
Nice.
But one of the others, a current MLS head coach, was also on the back line.
For what team?
For the Rapids.
Ooh.
Yeah. Tough one. Greg Vanney. Fraser connection was there. And then off the bench, he did not play in this match. Connor Casey, who had the interim tag. Yeah. Uh-huh. Who was the goalkeeper for the Rapids? How about that?
Was it Matt Pickens?
No, it was a glorious era of MLS goalkeepers.
Buna.
It was Buna.
Was Hurt Gomez on that team? No, he was
Hurt
in LA.
Hurt Gomez was on that team. He played 88 minutes in this match.
There you go.
Yeah, it was a 2-0 win for the Rapids. Who scored the goals?
Kyle Beckerman
had a goal. That's correct. He had the second goal, but the first goal was
Omar Cummings?
Nope.
Too early?
Yeah, too early for Omar. Omar, I believe, was in the reserve team at this time.
Mm-hmm. Was it...
to the reserve league.
Lopez?
2007 reserve league was lit.
And the Rapids 2000 reserve league? That's Kosuke Kimura. That's Omar Cummings. That's a, one Stephen Keel.
Nice.
That was a stack. Wow. That was a stacked squad. This was one season MLS for this player. Panamanian international.
Gabby Torres?
Nope. That's way too late. This was his only year in MLS. He played 13 games. He had 3 goals, and that was it.
I know exactly who you're talking about. And was it one of the Deli Valadez brothers?
Nope.
It wasn't Tejada.
Nope. Roberto Brown.
Oh wow.
You know who else started this game? Jovan Karofsky.
Let's go.
Chris Klein started this game.
Wow.
Eddie Pope played in it. What a wild game.
Jeff Cunningham, did he play?
Jeff Cunningham did play. What had about, 90 for RSL. No goals for him.
What about Andy Williams?
Yeah. All right. We're beating this to death.
All right.
Let's talk about the game from this weekend.
Doyle, we're going back to Instagram.
Here you go. I'll say this. This was the best thing that could have happened to this particular rivalry. Because as I said, there was a nothing burger. Colorado were so far out of this. They had gotten their butts whipped at home 2 years ago, like 7-1 by RSL. Yep. So for them to win 5-0, for them to basically get in a number of skirmishes on the field, to have the final whistle resemble something, just a little bit, of that like famous Mascherini moment where both teams are going at each other and Jack Price is being Jack Price and he's got all that like wild-eyed crazy man energy and he's yelling at the referees and fights are getting broken up. This was perfect. And it was completely unexpected to me. I know RSL are in like a very weird moment in time where sometimes they play well, other times they just get wiped. This was a wipe. But I did not expect this Rapids team to do that wiping, given the way they've been playing.
Nobody expected this. The Rapids, I don't think, have ever scored more than 2 goals in Utah. This was a record-setting win. And like it comes after earlier this year in the MLS's back tournament in that first game, RSL just blitzed the Rapids. 1-2-0. It could have been more than that. They were the only team on the field for most of that game. Then last month, these two teams met. RSL killed him 4-1, and it was such a commanding win. And for Rocky Mountain Cup purposes, the only games that matter this year are the Phase 2 games. So it was that game last month and this game this past weekend. After that game, the 4-1 win was so resounding, and RSL have been so dominant in this rivalry that RSL's official handle tweeted out, Rocky Mountain Cup champions, after leg 1. Like this came out of nowhere. It's literally unprecedented for this rivalry. And the way the Rapids did it, they just punished the hell out of RSL in terms of turning them over 40 yards from their own goal. They beat them on set pieces, which is the Rapids way really over the past year or so. And then they were able to get their fullbacks forward into meaningful spots. I mean, Sam Vines scored. Like they were able to get their fullbacks forward into meaningful spots in a way that they kind of haven't been as good at in 2020, which was one of the hallmarks I thought of their team last year. It was just comprehensive. They won the ball in midfield. They played tight. And as this is happening, like Vines is who I think has struggled a little bit this year, has upped his game over the past couple of weeks. But Cole Bassett has suddenly turned, and I was kind of lukewarm on Cole Bassett at best, but he is turning into a kind of under the radar cog for this team. So a lot of stuff that question marks over the past couple of weeks, you could argue they had been trending towards a really good performance, but this was just so far above and beyond a really good performance, and it feels like the exact sort of spark this team needed to rediscover some of the magic that they had in the second half of last year.
Yeah, 13 years of failure in the Rocky Mountain Cup, essentially, for the Rapids. They had something to get off their chest in this one. Well done. Now, Bobby knew about Cole Bassett, Bobby Warshaw. He's a big Cole Bassett guy, also a big Andres Recuarte guy. Before we get to Efra Alvarez, don't know if Bobby's a big Efra Alvarez guy in the mailbag.
Bobby is a huge Efra Alvarez guy. He was there before you'd heard Efra Alvarez's name.
Perfect. That's exactly what I want to hear. Anybody got any takes on LAFC? Portland? I mean, this is the first like test for Portland without Sebastian Blanco. Didn't go great, but some of that was on the defensive side. Like
They gave up 4 goals, man. It's mostly on the defense.
4 goals, but BWP missed 2 sitters, so it could have been worse. Yeah. It was kind of a good night for
when
them.
You can't, when you don't want to mark BWP on the 6, that means you're really...
That goal was hilarious.
You're really
I think both of these teams are obviously struggling right now defensively. No Diego Chara. That has always been an issue for Portland, and it was a massive issue in this game. If you look at that first goal in particular that LAFC scored, which was just gorgeous, they went straight up the gut. They got into zone 14 so easily. I thought the spacing was really good. The decision-making from Ginella was really good, when there hasn't been a ton of that. And then that reverse ball from Brian Rodriguez into that perfect run from Rossi. So they started to look more like LAFC of last year. They started to look more like that again. And then you add Atuesta in the second half. LAFC deserved all the thrashings they've taken over the past few weeks. And that I still have major questions about the right side of that defense. But it's a reminder that if you are not sharp defensively yourselves, even without Carlos Vela, they can drop four on you. And that's what happened to Portland. And Portland now are kind of reeling defensively. And like, getting Chara back will help, but he hasn't been a one-man fix this year. And they need to go back and figure out what was going right in July in Orlando. And get it right again, because the clock is starting to tick a little bit.
Missing Mabiala as well. We still don't know the timeline on that. And then they made that halftime sub, bringing Bonilla on for Duval, which I thought was interesting. Obviously, Rossi has probably as much speed as anyone in MLS, and that's not something Duval can do anymore. Bonilla doesn't totally seem to know how to defend, which is a bit of a problem there, but has the athleticism that they had at times last year with whatever the Argentine fullback's name is, who Dave can't remember now. So continue.
I was more positive on Portland. I mean, I understand that missing two key figures, and but when I saw the way, if you look at that team goal they score, where they build out of the back and break down LAFC, and then even Williamson again, just class player.
What a goal!
Yeah, him. I thought that their movement overall was really dynamic, getting contributions from all over. So for your first match without Sebastian Blanco, I felt like the attack still looked very good to me, and the way they were playing, the system still will function. I think the bigger questions, like we mentioned, were in the back, and how do you stop that? But with some missing pieces and going against an LAFC team that was motivated to get back on track, I felt more positive about Portland and what they're sort of, what that can sort of look forward, or what it looks like going ahead.
Let me just throw this stat out though. And I understand the reason for positivity, Kalen, because they have won a title this year, and I do think that is meaningful. They have nonetheless given up three or more goals in four of five outings since phase two started in the end of August. They lost 3-0 to Seattle. They drew 4-4 versus Real Salt Lake. They lost 3-2 to the Galaxy. They won 2-1 at Seattle last week, which was a great win. And then they lost 4-2 at LAFC. So things are kind of they have fallen apart defensively. And it's like, Gio's got to figure that out.
Yeah, but I'm less worried about that long term. I was more worried about I think they can fix that. I was more worried, can they fix the attack without Blanco? And that to me still looked good. So I understand. Point taken. But I'm projecting ahead. I'm projecting ahead with positivity in 2020. And I like Portland.
Kalen thinks the market's still strong.
Yes.
So he's not worried about it.
I have, before we get to the mailbag here, just a Doyle tweet without a ton of context about Efra Alvarez. And Kalen, I know Kalen drafts are such a wonderful thing, but Doyle, he'll just tweet this stuff and he'll just welcome.
Most of them are my tweets anyways. Send it to him. He's a burner account for me at this point.
Here's the tweet. This is in the middle of a 0-0 draw between LA Galaxy and San Jose Earthquakes, say Cali Clasico. They didn't exactly deliver what we're accustomed to. Hey, but the Quakes, after getting seven dropped on their heads, this was a big performance for them. Matt Doyle, there's just so much Freddie Adu in the kids' game, and of course that set people off. Explain that, and explain what you saw from Efra in this game, because he was really good.
He was really good, and he's been really good for a couple of weeks now. He's a little left-footed playmaker who's pretty slow, but has the ability to somehow always create separation with his balance and agility and these little feints. And he's so comfortable with the ball. It's wild to see him in those moments around the box where it's like there's a guy professional defender right on him, and Efrem will just create enough space to put a perfect cross in or to slide something across the six. He's a lot of fun to watch, and it is very reminiscent of Freddie Adu. The play that got me to tweet that was this 70-yard through ball where, like, there was a dude right on him, and Efra just had enough sort of, you know, wiggle in his game to create. Thanks, Takito. Efra just had enough wiggle in his game to create a little bit of space and just lace this 60-yard through ball to Christian Pavone, and it reminded me so much of the pass that Freddie Adu hit in 2011 rather at the Gold Cup. They're similar players. Freddie had enough talent to dominate Marcelo at the 2007 U20 World Cup. Freddie had enough talent to get bought by Benfica for $8 million back when $8 million was a lot. and Freddie had enough talent to be a significant player for the U.S. national team in the Gold Cup final a couple years later. Freddie's problem was that he was never athletic, and he was never fit. And because of that and his off-field things, he was never able to close that gap and become the type of consistent playmaker that we all kind of hope. That's what, I mean, Efra's 18, right? This is the time to stop being a teenager and start being a professional soccer player. I've heard from folks at the Galaxy that there've been a lot of tough talks, but the kid has listened. And the hope is that he can be, I mean, he's natural number 10. He sees the game in a way that it's different than almost anyone. And it's a joy to watch, and he's going to have to avoid making the mistakes that kind of ended Freddie's career. And if he does that, then the Galaxy have a good one and El Tri have a real good one.
What was the reaction, just because I didn't see it, but what was the reaction to the tweets? Were people positive about that? Negative? Like, what was the...
People, I was actually surprised because it was a litmus test, right? I knew exactly what I was doing when I sent that tweet. One guy was like, that doesn't sound like a compliment. Yeah. And I had to correct him because Freddie never delivered on his talent at any consistent level, but he also had moments where he dominated Marcelo at the U20 World Cup.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, like we all know he had that sort of talent. And I think most people who saw the tweet actually took it that way, which surprised me.
Yeah. Mm. Doyle always, I know, you know, you admitted it. You said, you know what you're doing, but I always take issue with those comparisons because sometimes people will say and be like, oh man, like Freddie Adu, if he has a Freddie Adu career to me, Freddie was a consistent, dangerous threat in Major League Soccer, at times really good, at times not so great. And then also, of course, the expectations, but I think sometimes with young players, especially when we make comparisons to guys, like I can't remember who. Who is the other Galaxy left-footed young guy who came in and was scoring goals?
Alex Mendes.
No. This was years ago.
Tristan Bowen.
No.
Villarreal.
Yeah. And I remember he scored a couple goals, and I was like, man, that looked like Aleko Eskandarian in that moment, right? And people were like, what? He's gonna be the next. He's gonna be bigger than that. Like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, all right, well, we take Aleko, right? Aleko was a top player, had injuries. But I think in general with young players, we sometimes think like, oh, they've got to have this crazy, you can't compare him to somebody. And I'm like, hey, Freddie had a good, had a nice career. Not to, of course, it was a complicated story overall, but yeah, anyways. That's for another show. Yeah.
Yeah, we got to have the 30 for 30. All right, Dave, 401.
Maybe a movement episode.
No, I think Grant Wall's doing a podcast about it.
Oh, speaking of the movement, look at that! Look at that transition, Kalen. Tell us what's coming from the movement, and then we'll play the teaser.
Well, this year, obviously, unprecedented is the way we have been describing it, and it's totally true. But yeah, we couldn't travel obviously and do the show, and I've been thinking of ways of how do we continue to tell stories. And basically, Ray Gaddis and I have become friends over the years, as we mentioned in the tucked in shirt community. But he gave me a call and sent me a message when he was back in Indianapolis before the bubble and everything was going on. And he was talking about going to protests around the Black Lives Matter movement. We started talking, how can we tell this story? Trying to get to Indianapolis was not really going to be feasible at the time in a safe way with cameras or anything like that. So we did like an audio recording. Then it started to kind of snowball. I spoke to Jeremy Obobese, Ike Opara, other guys, and just basically for over months, I've spoken to guys throughout the BPC and also some MLS supporters when I was in Atlanta. So it's kind of snowballed into this larger story, and we've continued to update it and follow it as the Orlando tournament happened, and then even afterwards. And then Extra Time alum Nick Fershaw came on board he's you know, excellent podcast himself with Paternal, and helped me to really produce this and try and turn it into a real powerful story. So it features a lot of different people. A lot of different players are supposed to come out this Wednesday. So if people can, I think on the Extra Time feed, right? Is it going to go on?
Yeah, we're going to drop the full show here, but okay. You should also, of course, go, you guys have your own feed too, the Movement, right? So
yes.
More of these should be coming. So yes. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can go subscribe to that. You should do that right now. I've heard the full show. It is wonderful. It is informative. It is inspiring. It is a level of production that only Nick Fershaw could bring it in some of the audio elements. So go check that one out. We'll leave you with this snippet. We're out of time, but we have an amazing mailbag that I've just been scrolling through. So we'll go through all of that on Thursday's show with Charlie Davies. Here is the trailer. Go download it. The full show will be coming soon right here on our feed. And give us some thoughts. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Enjoy your week, everybody.
When I look in the mirror, I could easily see George Floyd or a Trayvon Martin.
The fact that in a moment, my life could be decided at a split second by the color of my skin.
What for? What did we do? Not even being funny now, are we gonna make it home? I mean, too often we hear and we watch people narrate their own death.
You know, Eric Garner, I Can't Breathe.
George Mann, Darius Stewart.
Tatiana Jefferson.
Tyree Crawford. Emmett Till, even coming way before us.
Sandra Bland.
India Kager.
Respectability politics kills us. It tells the wider public that unless we are Harvard grads, you know, with nice jobs and no record, there is a reason acceptable enough for us to be killed. And for some reason, the onus is always on the victim. Oh, he smoked weed. Oh, he had a couple robberies. You know, oh, he stole from 7-Eleven.
Michael Brown.
Oh, he looked intimidating. He was 6 feet.
Tamir Rice.
Or in Tamir Rice's case, he was 12 years old, but he looked like a man.
Laquan McDonald.
Laquan McDonald. I mean, 16 shots. That's unfathomable.
I can easily see these people as myself.
There's too many to name.